This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Good morning. It is time for this week's broadcast of Worcester Magazine, your local connection to the news, views, and events happening in Worcester. Today, we will be reading from the July 24th, 2026 edition of Worcester Magazine. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm Julie Standrovich, reading with Catherine Thornton. Thank you for joining us. And we begin, as usual, with Wisteria. A Tale of Two Murals at Site of the Former Dive Bar by Victor D'Infante. Worcester has no shortage of memorable murals, but the sea serpent that adorned the wall of the former dive bar on the corner of Green Street and Temple Street was among the most striking and a favorite of many Worcester residents. The mural, painted by local artist Scott Boylard for the 2017 Pow Wow Worcester Mural Festival, outlived the 2019 closing of the dive bar, and the short life of the bar that subsequently occupied that space, the Sundown, which closed in 2025. So, naturally, locals were a little shocked to see that the mural was recently painted over. The appearance, soon after, of the logo for the corner bar, which is set to have its grand opening at that location on August 7th, didn't cause much concern, but what can arguably be described as parody of the Worcester Red Sox mascot on the wall caused a small internet frenzy. The image has since been removed. The figure, created by artist and Worcester native Tony Freitas, is depicted as an ambulatory smiley face similar to the Woo Sox mascot Smiley Ball, whereas Smiley is often depicted as holding a baseball bat. The mural's figure held a bottle labeled Lager. Both figures wear baseball caps, but the one on the mural has the cap backward and held what was either a cigarette or a joint. Had Red Sox similar to Smiley's, only they fitted loosely and had patched holes. Finally, the figure on the wall had tattoos and bloodshot eyes. "While I was doing it," said Freitas in a recent phone conversation, "everyone was all compliments." When what he saw as positive feedback he had received in person curdled into criticism online, he admits that he was taken aback. "I didn't do it maliciously," said Freitas. "I didn't do it to ruffle any feathers. That's what me and my friends look like. I wear a backward baseball cap. I have a drink once in a while. I sometimes have pollen in my eyes." Freitas continues to explain that he's drinking a near beer and smoking a cigarette. "It's a bar. I love Worcester. I work here. All my friends are here. I wasn't taking shots at Worcester. I didn't put a needle in his arm. There's a dispensary on every corner. I was just trying to be a little more real and a little bit fun." Freitas is no stranger to controversy. His hand-painted image of Harley-Davidson's logo on the Miss Worcester Diner brought the local favorite into a copyright clash with Sheldon's Harley-Davidson of Auburn, a dispute which was subsequently settled. Still, Freitas says the controversy got to him. "In my head, all the negative comments, my daughter, my mom, they were getting upset. The artwork looked great. Every time they broadcasted that video, the artwork looked awesome." Freitas says the experience didn't kill me, it didn't hurt me. Then he admits, a little bit though. With the corner dive mural, history seems to be repeating itself, at least somewhat. But there are some substantive differences. Corner dive owner Kyle Purcell, in a phone conversation, says that it wasn't his intent immediately to paint over Boylard's sea serpent, but that the mural had been vandalized and needed to be either repaired or replaced, and they chose the latter. Purcell says he reached out to Freitas. "I was approached to do some work," recalls Freitas, who says he was a fan of Boylard's mural. "It's fantastic work," says Freitas. "It wasn't my decision. I was paid to do a job, and it was going to go no matter what I did or said." Freitas and Purcell both agree they discussed ideas for the wall, but Purcell denies that he knew how the figure would appear. "We agreed on a certain mural," says Purcell. "We're inside, renovating, getting ready, paint, and the portrait was put up. It was not what we agreed upon," adding that he was concerned at how locals and the Woo Sox would react. "It was a business decision. I just didn't want the first story about the bar to be somebody telling me to take it out." Freitas, who says he has been under the impression that he and Purcell had been on the same page about the mural, says Purcell called to inform him that the figure would have to come down. Freitas says he offered to come down and do it the next day, but the figure had already been painted over by the following morning. I don't think there was legal pressure, says Freitas, but there was talk of someone from the Woo Sox potentially complaining, and the owner decided it should go. I completely respect the decision to do that from a business viewpoint. Both Purcell and a Worcester Red Sox representative confirmed that there had not been any legal complaints made about the figure. Perhaps it shouldn't be surprising that the erasure of two murals, one a local favorite, the other an ostensible parody of a local sports team mascot, should cause a stir. Murals are a large part of the city's cultural identity, and Worcester has been on record as having the most murals of any city in New England. It is unclear if that is still true. I think that all murals are meant to be ephemeral, says Shay Anderson, former chair of Powwow Worcester, in a 2022 interview with Worcester Magazine. I've never been a person who thinks a mural is supposed to last 10, 20 years. It's an opportunity to capture a moment in time. And as time changes, as community changes, we have city and groups who can express themselves and their culture. Boylard declined to comment on the situation, but said that murals are rarely permanent, and I'm really proud and thankful for the 8 to 9 years my mural had on that wall. Whether or not they were ever on the same page about the mural, both Purcell and Freitas state that there's no bad blood between them, and both affirm that Freitas was paid in full for the work. Purcell is readying the bar for its imminent opening, as well as an August 6th after-party for the premiere of Tommy Dwyer's documentary, Burning Down the House, which will feature music from Sam James. Still, Purcell says he's already reached out to other artists for fresh ideas for the Temple Street wall, perhaps something with different sports and college logos and the smiley face, making it more of a gathering, not a separating, an homage to all things Worcester. And now we move on to some Poetry Town for you. This one is called Stellar Summer's Eve, and it was written by Thomas F. Gorham III. We look up and reach out to touch the countless points of light that shine above in the dark of night. From time before us until time long after, the beams of each have traveled far. Wise men can tell which ones they are. That shine the brightest and form the shapes that mold our fortunes and guide us from Gemini to Taurus. The water carrier, the crab and fish, the shape of a hunter's belt is there, sharing sky with a major and minor bear. It is true that our fate lies not in the stars, as Shakespeare once so aptly stated, then why has it been so long debated? Since man first looked to the sky, that there has been a desire to know, is this our lot or where we are meant to go? Lay back and muse on what you see. The universe is yours to ponder, in awe, in reverence, and in wonder. Tom Gorman spent 50 years in broadcasting, public relations, and politics before retiring. He now spends his time writing short stories, poetry, and several of his poems have been published locally and nationally. His short story, A Classless Reunion, appears in crime anthology New Kids in the Hood, published by Murderous Ink Press in the UK. A member of the Academy of American Poets, the Worcester County Poetry Association, and the Short Mystery Fiction Society, he lives with his wife, Janice, in Worcester. And now we're going to send you over to Catherine for some more articles from Worcester Magazine.
First up is First Person, Susanna Parpos on Steppin' Up in Heels. Cinderella had her glass slippers. Dorothy had her ruby red pumps. This writer has her favorite pair of nude stilettos. They say women that can run in heels should be feared. I can run in heels. I may not wear them, stilettos, like I used to, but I know if push came to shove, I'd be like the lyrics in that Toby Keith song about aging. May not be as good as I once was, I'm good once as I ever was. So go ahead and double dog dare me to run in them. I carry ibuprofen in my purse, right along with the reading glasses and the pair for night driving. Me and my stilettos, they made me superwoman until they became somewhat my kryptonite. And thus, on the other side of the bedroom closet door, they remain latent pairs boxed in perfect stillness. That is all but the favorite pair of nudes and the bold, vibrantly red floral print ones that made a statement one summer night at a comedy show, and then on a different summer day, humorous disarray at an overseas airport. Both the former and the latter are in clear view and stay at the ready awaiting their summer night out of dancing, just as the creamsicle ankle-strap stilettos did during sound check that night in Foxborough. The stilettos in my closet harbors, it's not the shoes themselves, a bitterly sweet lament, but my ability to do everything in them, with the exception of when I was barefoot at the beach or coaching my son's baseball and flag football teams, I was in heels. The dormant collection defines an era of transition and transformation, symbolizing the beauty and grace that exists in surviving and thriving. The fire engine red heels worn the night I took to the mic to try my hand at stand-up, the 8-minute set I wrote and delivered in front of a live audience as well as those watching live on Facebook, was comedy for a cause. Or so it was that in her stilettos, a newspaper columnist stepped out of her comfort zone to raise awareness and funds for a local domestic violence agency. Just as Cinderella's glass slipper revealed her true identity as royalty, my fire engine red heels bear the part of me that, without hesitation, will embrace a sense of demure invincibility in order to give voice to causes close to my heart. The stiletto collection that defined the era of transition, transformation, and thriving was not solely comprised of heels meant for my jobs and the participatory journalism pieces like stand-up that I wrote for my column. And while Carrie Bradshaw and I have some things in common, my shopping habits don't mirror that of Sex and the City character. If I had the money, I'd never spend it on ultra-luxury, high-end designer brands. In the decade I wrote my bi-weekly newspaper column, I may have become synonymous with stilettos, but my footwear was often paired with a camouflage Red Sox baseball hat because I'm more of a dirt and diamond mom than a Manolo Blahnik one. In the hopefully temporary dormant collection, there is even a freebie pair of ocean blue heels sent as a gift by a Fortnite-playing grandmother in customer service at 9 West. The stilettos my bedroom closet harbors, one of those days age won't be a factor, and I'm going to bring them all out of retirement, including the Hello Lover pair. In a well-known Sex and the City moment, Sarah Jessica Parker's character reacts to a pair of Christian Louboutin heels she sees in a store window with the iconic line, "Hello, lover," while the actress's shoe line features heels with those words stamped on them. My "Hello, lover" pair are the newspaper print stiletto pumps in her shoe line, which I did not buy at retail price. Back when I was a younger woman, I used to be superwoman in my stilettos. Now my body says you can't marathon wear them, but my pride says, oh, yes, you can. The cold, hard truth is I'm not as able as I once was, but when I'm feeling bulletproof, I'll be as good as once I ever was. In the music scene, Scarecrow Hill, ready to rock palladium with release of new album. Plymouth new metal band Scarecrow Hill is taking over the palladium upstairs July 25th. To celebrate the release of their 6th studio album, Over Everything. And it'll be a first not only for the audience, who will get to hear the new record for the first time, but for the band as well. For the first time ever, we're playing the entire record start to finish, vocalist Tyler Monroe said. It's been stressful, but a lot of the record we wrote, I wouldn't say separately, but not all, sitting in a room. Prepping for the show was the first time we've all sat in a room and played them together for the full thing. Nu metal is a subgenre of heavy metal that incorporates elements from other musical genres, most notably grunge and hip-hop. Doors open at 6 p.m. Music begins at 6:30, featuring sets from North Shore band Devil Inside Us, New Hampshire bands Anaria and Under the Horizon, and Massachusetts band Enough of Me, before Scarecrow Hill hits the stage. The best thing we've done yet. Monroe said the band had not planned on writing an album, but when they began to work on the material that would become Over Everything, which arrives July 24th, the record took shape quickly. "We believe it's the best we've done yet," Monroe said. "This record seemed to happen very organically. It's been a stressful couple of years for everybody, and each of us had some things we had to get off our chest and get through. Everybody came with ideas, and songs just kept coming. We said, clearly we need to put something together. Once the album was finished, it was time to figure out where and how to premiere it. And the Palladium was an obvious choice, given Scarecrow Hill's long history there. The band's most recent Palladium appearance was an opening set for rap rock band Cottonmouth Kings in March. Worcester has always been home to us, which is wild because we're based in Plymouth. But we've always had such a good time in that scene. We put it out on Facebook. If we do release a show, where should we do it? It was overwhelming how many people wanted it for the Worcester Palladium. The Palladium was on board, and plans began coming together for another Worcester show by a band that has been playing in the city's rock venues for more than two decades. Our first Worcester show was in 2004 at Tammany Hall, which became a home for us many years until they closed. We spent a lot of time between Tammany Hall and the Raven. We've played so many awesome rooms up there, going all the way back to Lucky Dog. People really seem to get behind it. Two singles from the new record, A Formal Introduction and Real Lies, came out in the weeks before the release, and Monroe said the handful of Over Everything tracks that Scarecrow Hill has played live have met with enthusiasm from audiences. There are two songs we've tested out a couple of shows over the last 6 months that seem to go pretty well. People really seem to get behind it. We hadn't put anything new out in a couple of years, so we were a little nervous, but they went over awesome and solidified our idea that we should do it again live. The band hopes to meet that excitement and demand from fans with new merch, a lineup of opening bands that align with their sound and approach, and the set itself. We're accompanying that with the biggest merchandise drop we've ever done, and the bands we have for this show are our favorite Massachusetts bands, Monroe said. Overall, it's going to be a really huge family celebration for everybody who supports the scene and supports us. We're going to go hard and make it the best show we've ever done. Scarecrow Hill release party, 6:30 p.m. on July 25th at the Palladium upstairs on Main Street in Worcester. And that is $23.60. The Listen Up column by Meg Trigolo spotlights Perversion for Profit, plays it straight on new album. When you listen to Worcester rock band Perversion for Profit, you hear echoes of a whole host of influences. Lead singer David O'Toole's musical theater background, guitarist Chuck Tarr's 80s hair metal sound, drummer Michael Leonard's hardcore history. You'll hear all of them once again on the band's second studio album, Playing It Straight, released June 25th, where O'Toole and Tarr bring back their songwriting partnership. Tarr writes the chords, O'Toole writes the lyrics, to weave together all different kinds of musical and lyrical ideas. The record starts off loud, wild, and woolly with the echo line. I wrote that to be either a spoof or a ripoff of an 80s-style song like mid-88. I had no idea David was going to sing about a camper van when I wrote the song. The camper van in question was O'Toole's home at the time, the fulfillment of a van life dream he had for a long time, and it turned out to be just the right studio for the recording. I was living in the camper van when I recorded those vocals inside. That camper van was a near-perfect recording booth because it was all soft fabric on the inside. It was totally sealed. It's written from the perspective of a used car salesman from way back when, which has a little to do with how we acquired the RV, but the chord struck me as very loud and rude and brash, and I vibed with that as I got into the song. You don't have to set your dreams aside. In the Econo line, you can look out the stars. 1990 was a bad year for me, but it was great for cars, O'Toole sings. I'm My Father's Son. War Games takes its title from the 80s movie and its sound from the same decade, and its lyrics are an example of what bassist Matteo Dugan says about O'Toole as a writer. He can be telling two or three stories at the same time in the same song, and whatever one makes you want to listen to it is the one you'll hear. War Games is about two different things, the good things my dad taught me, and encounters with the military-industrial complex and the war machine, O'Toole said. The reason I was asked to use my programming skills on behalf of that was because I was really good with computers. And the reason I was really good with computers was because of my dad. Who taught you to raise your voice? I must admit my father's the one. Who taught you how to make this righteous noise? That's right, I'm my father's son. Who are all these people coming round asking questions about my dreams and my plans for the future, O'Toole sings. At one point, before Tarr's screaming guitar solo, O'Toole shouts, "Take it away, Chuck," and Dugan said that was intentional. We want our live show to sound as close to the recording as possible. New Century Patriotism. On discipline, O'Toole brings two more seemingly unrelated ideas together. Bush-era anger at this country's imperialist war projects, which is once again relevant in 2026, and the games people play that their friends and family eventually learn to go along with. When people's needs are frustrated in those ways, they can lash out. It's an admission, hey, I'll play along if I need to, because that's the nature of things, whether we like it or not. The other parts of the song are a little satirical, New Century Patriotism. I'll dance when you say dance, but that's all. Whatever you feel when you think about us, bondage and discipline are not the same as love. Now don't you touch my old glory shoes. That's where the wings of freedom are glued to my feet. On this country's mine, O'Toole, a lifelong Massachusetts resident, decides it's time to take the great American road trip, trying to burst out of feeling provincial while realize I have been largely the source of my own troubles. I'm stranded for all time in Anger, Massachusetts, as if Anger was the name of a town. The title track, Playing It Straight, is a remarkable bit of wordplay. The album is named after the track and after the straightforward rock sound of the record, but the track itself is all about the experience of being gay, trying to disabuse your heterosexual friends of the notion that you're dating your gay friends, playing your relationship straight, so to speak. It's not something I want to overemphasize because there are four of us, not just one. But if you dig into the lyrics a bit, you realize, oh, this song is about a dude, O'Toole said. If you look into the lyrics, that information is there, but there's not going to be a big sticker on the front that says that. Trying to date in 2026 is a horror show. Crossroads is another track where O'Toole said he took a satirical viewpoint on being middle-aged and gay, singing about the minefield that is his dating pool, which may be relatable no matter who you are or who you're looking for, because trying to date in 2026 is a horror show for just about everyone. So far, Dugan said the songs from Playing It Straight and Perversion for Profit in general have gone over well live. Dugan's favorite aspect of shows, though, isn't an audience's reaction to any given song, but the sense of connection and relief that live music so often fosters. There's usually somebody who's got their arms folded in the back of the room before we start playing, but they're out to a show because they want to release and forget about their problems. But if I'm able to connect to that person by the end of the set, they're right in front of the stage, Dugan said. We did our job. And now for this week's cover story.
You are listening to Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. And now it's time for this week's cover story. The mission goes beyond one event. Upcoming festivals celebrate culture and community. And there are three of them. The first one is India Day, written by Richard Duckett. There will be a number of experiences for visitors to enjoy at this year's India Day celebration, presented by the India Society of Worcester, August 8th, at the DCU Center. Experience India with all five senses, said Muthu Rajasekaran, Assistant Treasurer and member of the Executive Board of the India Society of Worcester, as well as the marketing lead person for this year's event. The day-long happening, running from noon to 7 p.m. August 8th, with free admission, will include a full, colorful, cultural program of music and dance performances, as well as delicious Indian food for purchase, 35 vendors, including artists and crafters, children's activities, a Women Empowering Women initiative, and a free health stop for free health screenings. Special guest will be Honorable Consul General of India in Boston, Raghuram S., in what will be his first visit, said Kamlesh Kilnani, Secretary of the India Society of Worcester and co-director on the event with Suchitra Shinde. People attending can also hopefully experience Udaan, a Hindi word that translates to flight in English and is also a metaphor for peace. The flight of peace is the theme of this year's India Day. Udaan is commonly used to describe the action of taking off or soaring in the sky, or as a metaphorical expression for reaching new heights and achieving aspirations, Rajasekaran said. In the current age, it's very much needed to bring people together, not just the Indian community, but the wider community together, Rajasekaran said. The flight of peace from the Indian word flight reflects a future where peace guides our actions. Last year's India Day had the theme from the Sanskrit phrase Satyamev Jayate, truth alone triumphs. In 2024, it was Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, one world, one family. People seem to be getting the messages. Attendance at recent annual India Day events at the DCU Center has been in the 2,500 to 3,500 plus range, organizers said. They're expecting a similar or perhaps larger attendance this year. Rajasekaran said India Day, along with India Society of Worcester activities in general, is not just for people of the Indian community. We want this India Day to be accessible to every family in New England. Last year, and also in previous years, both Indian and a significant number of people of other Worcester area cultures attended. We feel our outreach has been successful. The event is actually several celebrations in one, organizers said. It is almost 79 years since August 15, 1947, when India formally achieved its independence as a country after over 200 years of British rule. India Day is presented by the India Society of Worcester around the date every year, and August 15th celebrations in India are akin to the 4th of July here. The India Society of Worcester, a volunteer nonprofit organization, was founded 63 years ago in 1963 by a few members of the Indian community living in Worcester at the time. There's plenty to celebrate with what the society has achieved. The main focal point of the Society's regular activity now is the India Center at 152 Main Street in Shrewsbury, built on land purchased in 1991 and which has become a strong presence supporting the Greater Worcester Indian Community and more. The Indian community of Greater Worcester and New England has grown significantly over the years. Many Indian immigrants came to the U.S. as professionals in the 1980s, drawn by the high-tech industry. In addition, there are many physicians and other specialists in medical professions. The India Society of Worcester has nearly 1,200 family memberships, with a family counted as four people, Kilnani said. Not everyone is up to date with membership, he said, but added, there's been a strong uptick of people signing up to life memberships. Programs at the India Society of Worcester include cultural, youth, and senior activities, groups such as Women Empowering Women, and sports and games. The Indian Medical Association of New England and India Society of Worcester provide a free health stop program Wednesday evenings for anyone who is underserved or uninsured in the community. The health stop is staffed by volunteers, including physicians, social workers, and dietitians. Health stop is also a fixture at the India Day event, Kilnani said. A reflection of the Indian community's presence in New England is that last September, Raghuram S. assumed charge as the first Consul General of India in Boston. We're super excited to welcome them to the community, Kilnani said of the Consul General and his staff coming to the DCU Center. It's like a special year for us, said Rajasekaran. Preparations for India Day were reaching a peak, as Kilnani and Rajasekaran were talking a few days ago. It's all hands on deck, Kilnani said. Every 2 hours, I see that someone new wants to take part. We have a very vibrant India Society of Worcester group. Rehearsals are in full swing, said Smita Mandrakar, cultural chair of the India Society of Worcester. The cultural program for India Day at the DCU Center will feature 32 to 35 performances with a minimum of 6 artists for each performance. Some may be as many as 15 participants, Mandrakar said. The groups will include dancers, vocal ensembles, and drummers, and many of the performers will be wearing colorful costumes. The performers range in age from 5-year-old dancers in children's dance groups to a senior group. Many come from the India Society of Worcester, but we're trying to get outreach from outside the area, she said. The performance styles will go from classical from hundreds of years ago to Bollywood. There is a lot of storytelling, some of it about the sacrifices people made. It's a celebration, but it's emotional, Mandrakar said. We won't restrict anyone. Even a 3-minute performance can take 2 months of choreography and practice, she noted. It does take a lot of time. Everyone's putting 100% into this event. But performers wouldn't have it any other way. It's a joyful event, Mandrakar said of India Day at the DCU Center. We always look forward to it. The food vendors this year will be Kraft Indian Kitchen from Acton and Pepper's Indian Cuisine of Northborough. There will also be a Pa'an station, Kilnani said. Pa'an is a popular Indian mouth sweetener, freshener, and digestive made from betel leaves. The India Society of Worcester's India Day celebrations have also taken place in the past locations such as Worcester State University and the former Holy Name High School, now St. Paul Diocesan Junior Senior High School. This will be the 10th year at the DCU Center, not counting the break for the COVID-19 pandemic, Kilnani said. DCU has been such a great partner for us. We always want to keep coming back, he said. Activities this year will be on the 3rd floor of the convention center with a performance space and different rooms for certain vendors and groups. The mission goes beyond one event, said Rajasekaran, about the goals of the India Society of Worcester in bringing people together. A lot of people know what we do. We want more of it. The society has worked with other cultural groups on community engagement events, Kilnani said. We're trying to be more visible and support other organizations. Recent collaborations have included combining the Worcester Art Museum for the free Diwali Fall Community Day or Festival of Lights cultural celebration, as well as working with New England Botanic Garden at Tower Hill in Boylston and the Worcester Red Sox. Next year, the India Society of Worcester will be part of Shrewsbury's 330th anniversary celebrations, Kilnani said. And now for the second event, Summer Gospel Fest. And this article was written by Meg Dragolo. Downtown Worcester will once again ring out with the sounds of gospel music on July 25th as the annual Summer Gospel Fest returns to the Worcester Common for its 11th year. As always, founder and organizer Michelle Memnon said, the day's festivities will provide a place for music lovers of all stripes to listen to talented artists and for anyone downtown that afternoon to socialize, try new foods, and have fun. It's to bring the believers and the people of faith outside the four walls, to connect believers together because not all the individual churches are connecting with each other. And it's a unified place where everyone can just enjoy the summer, enjoy live music, enjoy each other, Memnon said. Throughout the festival, which runs from 1 to 8 p.m., 12 performances will take place on the stage at the center of the festival, surrounded by local art vendors, food trucks, community organizations, and even some roller skating. Individual singers include Ashley Lester, Marshall Lee, and Chapella Rabes will perform in the afternoon, and starting at 5 p.m., groups will take the stage. Bridge of Destiny, Out of Darkness, Worcester reggae gospel singer N. Fearon, and his group, 4TM, the Jubilee Worcester Choir. What I like is that everybody's gifted, whether you want to call it their craft or their gift, and everybody is gifted in their unique way, Memnon said. When you think about voices, the beauty of the instrument of their vocal cords is unique and different. One person can be just as mighty as a whole group. The night's final performers will be Lancaster-based Kingdom Voice and Music, led by singer Karosha Sedelka, who organizes Worcester's annual Black History Month concert each February. Each year since 2022, Summer Gospel Fest has chosen a different organization to showcase between performers and with which to share some of its revenue, and this year's choice is Kingdom Voice and Music. Why I pull that in is to highlight what the organizations are doing. I give them an opportunity to voice what their organization is to everybody who doesn't know, Memnon said. It's a little financial seed, and I want it to be a blessing to their organization. But it's that platform to spotlight them, to highlight them. The festival will include a kids' zone where children can join games, make crafts, enjoy a bouncy house, and play soccer, particularly relevant because of this year's FIFA World Cup. A changing table will be available for families with babies. Yard games will be set up on the Commons grass, and at some points in the afternoon, the Worcester Common Oval will be open to roller skaters, inspired by the Friday night roller skating hours that have brought crowds to the Oval this summer. We like to add something new every year, and this year we decided to add in roller skating. Something just told me to reach out because it's a beautiful addition, Memnon said. It won't be throughout because I want people to be able to focus on other things, but it's a nice addition, rolling in something new. What does Memnon enjoy most about the festival in 11 years? Watching people arrive on the common and stay all day. Some people come just to get food, but then you find people who come and sit down for the whole day to just enjoy the festival. And I think that is so beautiful, Memnon said. I'm on the move, so if I'm on the stage, I can look out and see it. But when I get to look back at the videos and pictures, I see that. All in all, Memnon said, Summer Gospel Fest aims to have something for everyone. It's not just for church people or believers. Gospel Fest is also to bring hope to people that you can come outside and listen to free music, Memnon said. It's not church, and we're not out there preaching. It's ministering music, love, peace, unity, and togetherness. And now for the third event, Worcester African Fest. And this was written by Margaret Smith. For fans around the world, soccer is more than a game. A celebration of unity symbolized by the game, in particular the FIFA World Cup, will highlight the fourth annual Worcester African Festival, set for August 1st, at Worcester City Hall and City Common. The festival is expected to draw 3,000 to 5,000 participants, according to Jermo Kamara, President and Chief Empowerment Officer of the Massachusetts Organization of African Descendants, commonly known as MOAD, which organizes the festival. Although Spain's victory over Argentina on July 19th marked the end of the World Cup Games, for festival organizers, there's still a lot to celebrate. It's a celebration of the World Cup. We're asking fans, people who are going to the festival, to wear jerseys, just celebrating the countries that qualified and played great in the World Cup, Kamara said. Organizers hope to see jerseys of teams of the 10 African nations that qualified, as well as that of Haiti and Brazil. African nations with teams competing for the World Cup included Morocco, South Africa, Senegal, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Cape Verde, Egypt, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Algeria. Haiti was in the World Cup for the first time in 52 years. Cape Verde is the first time, among other victories. This is also the first time ever we've had 10 African countries. This is a huge milestone for Africa, and also the diaspora, Kamara said. We come together again in celebration, in unity for love of soccer. All these countries that played in the World Cup, to be honest, we all cheered the love of soccer. That's what we want to continue with. Scheduled guests of the festivals include Win Wanjiku, Miss Worcester 2025-2026, and Miss Ghana USA, Vanessa Obeng. In addition, the festival will feature music, DJs, arts, crafts, traditional foods, vendors, and more. Organizers are still accepting vendor applications and still working to raise funds for the festival, whose operating budget is about $65,000, Kamara said. Of this amount, there was, as of deadline on July 20th, a little over $40,000 to go. We have two bands this year that cost money, Kamara said. We have stages, sound production. We have young people, artists, and creatives who come in and get involved in our festival. We pay them for their time for doing that. We feed volunteers. We pay for the police, and that's not cheap. There are also permits from the city, tables for vendors, and portable toilets among the expenses. We are asking for more help and more recognition of the value of our festival, said Kamara. We want to push the festival forward so people leave the festival happy and fulfilled. The festival draws participants from around the region, and Kamara said organizers hope they will recognize that Worcester is a terrific place that people can have fun in and value the culture of unity here in our city. All right, so to recap these three events and when and where they occur, first up we have India Day from the India Society of Worcester. That will be August 8th. From noon to 7 p.m. at the DCU Center at 50 Foster Street in Worcester. It is a free event, and you can go to dcucenter.com for more information. The second one was the Summer Gospel Fest. That is July 25th from 1 to 8 p.m. on the Worcester Common at 455 Main Street in Worcester. That is also a free event, and you can go to spirituallyfabulous.com for more details on that one. And last, but certainly not least, the Worcester African Festival. And that will be on August 1st from noon to 7:30 p.m. at the Worcester City Hall and City Common, 455 Main Street. That is also a free event, and you can go to moadma.org for more details on that. And they are still trying to gather funds and asking for people's help. And that wraps up this week's cover story for Worcester Magazine. Now we send you back over to Catherine for some more articles.
Richard Duckett, covering the art world, writes about Nikki Erskine takes the helm at Whitensville-based ValleyCast. When Nikki Erskine was doing marketing for arts organizations in the Worcester Cultural Coalition as part of her job working for the city of Worcester, she got to see that there was a lot going on in the Whitensville-based ValleyCast. I was promoting everything ValleyCast had going on, Erskine recalled. I did like what they were doing. There's an additional layer of what they were doing. ValleyCast is the arts and cultural arm of Open Sky Community Services, a nonprofit agency in Worcester that provides a wide range of services for children, adults, and families with mental health challenges, intellectual and developmental disabilities, substance use disorders, brain injury, homelessness, and other complex challenges. ValleyCast is a member of the WCC, a public-private partnership between the City of Worcester and over 90 cultural organizations in the Greater Worcester area. I was really impressed by how ValleyCast is a function of Open Sky Community Services. ValleyCast connects Open Sky to the rest of the community through the arts. Now, Erskine, who lives in Worcester and has roots in the Blackstone Valley area, is getting to see the layers of ValleyCast from an even more close-up vantage point as its new director. Fun and meaningful work. Located at the historic White Mill in the Whitensville section of Northbridge on the banks of the Mumford River, ValleyCast develops, produces, and hosts events and activities for people of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds to enjoy together. Taking the helm of ValleyCast with its rich history of breaking down barriers through the arts is a true privilege. I'm looking forward to meeting our neighbors, collaborating with local creators, and finding new accessible ways to bring people together, Erskine said. Not only is my work fun, but meaningful. The Wagon Mill Complex includes Dennis H. Rice Community Plaza, the Spalding R. Aldrich Heritage Gallery, and Singh Performance Center. Erskine has hit the ground running, as there's always a lot going on at Ballycast, including currently a summer concert series on the plaza, an art exhibition in the gallery, and art classes and workshops. More is upcoming. It's awesome to work with so many talented and passionate people. This is such a great group. Everyone's invested in prioritizing people. Art as a pathway to inclusion. Erskine's predecessor at Ballycast was Christy Colari, who was Director of Community Outreach and officially retired at the end of June. In nearly two-decade tenure at Ballycast, Colari served as an artist-in-residence and in various administrative roles. She consistently prioritized art as a pathway to inclusion, expanding gallery exhibits, diversifying the summer concert series, and launching community initiatives like the White and Mill Mural Project and the Freestyle Weaving Studio. Ballycast said in an announcement last month about Erskine's appointment, Erskine said that there was an overlap between her coming on board and Colari leaving. I got to pick her brain and get a feel for how she did things in the past. For her own part, Erskine brings more than two decades of experience in arts administration, marketing, and event planning to support independent artists and accessible cultural programming. She's co-director of the former beloved Start on the Street in Worcester. As a director of Ballycast, her responsibilities include arts and gallery administration, event management, community engagement, grants, and communications. Ballycast has also announced the appointment of David Wolf as coordinator. Wolf will support Erskine with community outreach, arts programming, and event management to connect Blackstone Valley with the arts. Wolf has nearly a decade of experience working with nonprofit community-focused organizations as a graphic designer and communications specialist. A nice break from the city. The White and Mill's roots hammer back in time to Paul Whiten's construction of a brick mill in 1826. At one point, Whiten Machine Works employed 5,600 people. The company closed in 1976. Now Whiten Mill has been cast in a different sort of role. Ballycast is only 20 minutes, if that, from downtown Worcester. It's a nice break from the city. Another aspect of the cultural organization she likes is its accessibility as a space for everyone. It removes barriers in that way. Meanwhile, with programs such as the Free Summer Concert Series, it's fun to see so many turn out and enjoy the show. This is the 17th year for the series, which runs from 6 to 8 p.m. each Thursday. It began June 25th and concludes September 3rd. Food will be available for purchase from Big Daddy's Bites food truck. The remaining schedule includes July 23rd, Catnip Junkies, July 30th, Clapham Hill Symphony Orchestra's Summer Wind, August 6th, Blackstone Valley Bluegrass, August 13th, Les Mix Band, August 20th, Studio 2 Beatles Tribute Band, August 27th, The Reminiscence, September 3rd, the Seven Wonders Fleetwood Mac Tribute Band. In the event of inclement weather, the concerts move indoors to the Singh Performance Center. Ballycast has drawn a number of theater groups to the plaza and center over the years, including the former Worcester Shakespeare Company, which performed outdoors and indoors each summer from 2012 to 2018. Shakespeare makes a return when Infinity Performing Arts of Hopedale performs Twelfth Night, August 14th to the 16th. An ongoing series at Ballycast is Take Down the Wall on select Fridays, which provides a welcoming collaborative environment to share music and poetry for people of all ages and abilities, whatever someone wants to share, Erskine said. Meanwhile, there's incredible work in the galleries. With that, Erskine hopes to, quote, put my own spin on things. She noted that the CAST in Valley CAST stands for Culture, Arts, Science Together. However, science is not a very well represented aspect of our offerings right now. Possibilities for exploration in that regard might include the wildlife in the Mumford River and the history of the White Mill itself, Erskine said. Also, there are some programs that have happened in the past but have fallen off and could be restored. Erskine is thinking about a farmer's market or a fair for vendors. A street fair with arts and vendors is something Erskine has some good familiarity with from Start in the Street, and also knows that Blackstone Valley area. She said she grew up in Blackstone, and so at Valley CAST, I'm very much in my high school stomping ground. It was so vibrant and alive. Erskine studied marketing, advertising, and public relations at the arts-oriented Emerson College in Boston. While a student there, a friend invited her to Start on the Street in Worcester. She said that before attending, she hadn't always viewed Worcester from the most flattering of perspectives, but at the uniquely popular one-day arts and cultural festival that at its height drew thousands on one day in September once a year, it was such a different Worcester that I experienced that day. It was so vibrant and alive. All the people involved were volunteers. Erskine approached one of the organizers and said, I'd love to help out. That person was Tina Zlotti, co-director with Stacey Lord and Laura Murata. Erskine said Zlotti told her, great, you're in charge of marketing. Erskine would be involved with Start on the Street for many years. Besides working for the City of Worcester Cultural Development Office, where her responsibilities also included grant management, Erskine has been a radio host, project manager for Crocodile River Music, and most recently a consultant for artists and cultural groups, helping them with particular business side of the arts. When she heard about the Valley CAST position, she consulted her own thoughts about it. It was perfect for me. Margaret Smith writes, Woo Science, meteorologist Rob Lightbone keeps looking up. From childhood, Sturbridge resident Rob Lightbone sought his destiny in the skies. I've been in meteorology all my life, starting as early as 4, said Lightbone. I always remember being interested in meteorology, all things weather. I'd check out every weather book in the library. Lightbone now runs Crown Weather Services and Route 20 Weather and has made meteorology his full-time profession. For a photo, Lightbone suggested meeting up at Worcester's memorial to victims of the June 9, 1953 tornado. The tornado still ranks among New England's most extreme tornadoes. When Lightbone started in 1992 as an intern for the National Weather Service, part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, he said forecasting extreme weather was rare. However, with climate change, it's becoming more common. One of the challenges, he said, climate change is posing for the profession of meteorology. When Canadian wildfires created local hellscape skies July 14th and 15th with dust, smoke, and a scarlet sun like that of science fiction film, Lightbone shared photos and warnings, including about potential health effects. Lightbone goes out in all kinds of weather because that's where the weather's happening. That includes snowstorms and blizzards, my favorite type of weather, where I do measure how much snow accumulated both while it's snowing and right after the storm has ended. Lightbone also likes to go outside as a thunderstorm is approaching. A need for local forecasting. In 1994, Lightbone created his own website, Crown Weather Services. I've been running the same weather website service since 1994, Lightbone said. Then in 2018, my wife Meg suggested to me, why don't you start forecasting the weather around here and in central and western Massachusetts? It's lacking so much. And so I formed Route 20 Weather for western and central Massachusetts, including the Worcester metro area, and that is about it. Crown Weather Services is an online subscriber service that typically forecasts tropical storms, hurricanes, and weather activity stemming from the Caribbean. And then the Route 20 website is much more localized from Springfield, Worcester, and all the little towns in the Worcester area. Meteorology is the love that became Lightbone's career. It's basically my small business. I turned it from a side job to a full-time job back in 2013, and I've been doing it since full-time. Lightbone utilizes tools that include satellite and radar data, upper air data generated by weather services twice a day. In the winter, it would turn into determining what the environment is like for winter storms, snow, freezing rain, looking at different model data, which gives you an idea what the future is going to be like, what the storm might do for our area. Lightbone's most and least favorite weather to forecast. My favorite type of weather to forecast is actually winter storms. My least favorite type of weather to forecast is severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. A path through New England. Lightbone grew up on the New Hampshire seacoast, studied environmental science at the University of Maine at Presque Isle. Lightbone moved up to northern Maine in Caribou in 1995 because his father was serving in the civilian Air Force. Lightbone met his wife, a Worcester native, in 2005. In 2017, they moved to the area. When she pictured Maine, she thought she'd move to Cabot Cove, where the moose outnumber the people. We had enough of the winters. We moved to Springfield in 2017 and then bought a house here in Sturbridge. Asked if climate change has posed challenges for meteorologists, Lightbone said, "I think the biggest change I see in the summer are the nights are warmer, definitely much more humid than we've seen back when I was growing up in the 80s. Climate change challenge. A warming climate means more ice melting, more water evaporating, getting into the atmosphere. Due to a warming climate, the atmosphere is a whole lot more water. This is why I think we're seeing much more humid nights and much more humid days. As for higher temperatures, Lightbone said, during the day, not much more difference. We see 90s and 100s in the past, but seeing 70s, upper 70s and 80s more at night. Historically, your nights would be more in the 50s and 60s. More water in the atmosphere also means more soggy weather, Lightbone said. Also, our thunderstorms seem to be producing heavier downpours, and there is some increase in flash flooding. Lightbone recalled, growing up, I grew up on the New Hampshire seacoast. I remember being able to lay out at night. You could almost sleep outside. That is becoming an oddity. That is concerning for people who don't have air conditioning, who may not afford air conditioning. In the past, you could have some relief at night, open up those windows, but now it's becoming a big-time health hazard. When it comes to weather, heat leads to a cause of death, as noted by the American Public Health Association. Lightbone said, heat is actually the number one killer over floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, any other weather hazard. That's usually due to people at night not being able to get away from the heat and basically dying in their sleep from stroke or other heat-related illnesses. If that classic New England fall seems to be growing shorter, Lightbone said, I think our falls are becoming shorter, where we leapfrog from summer heat well into October, right almost into winter. As for spring, yeah, it does seem like it's leapfrogging from mid-winter range almost to summertime heat. Over the years, Lightbone has seen a growing change. One thing I thought of, I would call it a challenge for forecasting, is that the extremes are becoming more extreme, and that is something I think you have to be cognizant of. Lightbone said, when I started my internships with the Weather Service in 92, a meteorologist told me this is almost old-school forecasting, not to forecast extremes, because they rarely happen. And I think that old-school mindset is no longer valid. You almost have to think outside the box and not be concerned about forecasting records. You have been listening to a reading of Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Catherine Thornton, reading with Julie Standrovich. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
When someone you know is struggling with vision loss, it can be challenging. But the Mass Commission for the Blind is here to help. We'll connect them to resources that will help them plan for the future with new skills and assistive technology. Find out if they're eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.